Friday morning, I know you're busy, so how about last night's Bernie Sanders-Hillary Clinton debate in 90 seconds? Ready? Go.
If we can raise it to 15 in New York or Los Angeles or Seattle,
the viewers,
let's do it.
If you're both screaming at each other, the viewers won't be able to hear either of you. Okay.
Does Secretary Clinton have the experience and the intelligence to be a president? Of course she does. But I do question her judgment.
President Obama trusted my judgment enough to ask me to be Secretary of State.
Do you regret your advocacy for the crime bill?
My husband has apologized. He was the president who actually signed it. Senator Sanders voted for it.
Secretary Clinton called them out. Oh, my goodness. They must have been really crushed by this.
The question was about the transcripts of the speeches to Goldman Sachs. Why not release them?
When everybody does it, okay, I will do it.
Secretary Clinton, you just heard her. Everybody else does it, she'll do it. We will release our taxes. Jane does our taxes. We've been a little bit busy lately. You'll excuse us.
Senator, well, you know, there are a lot of copy machines around.
Senator, when are you
going to
release?
Unfortunately, I remain one of the poorer members of the United States Senate, and that's what that will show.
You know, if Senator Sanders doesn't agree with how you are approaching something, then you are a member of the establishment.
Interesting comment, but you didn't answer the question.
I did. If that's
no,
the
you
way
didn't.
My yes, I did.
I think we're going to win this nomination, to tell you the truth.
I love being in Brooklyn. This is great.
90 seconds, as promised, last night's debate. A lot of good punches thrown. Really, no new ground covered. Somewhere along the line, somebody with money hurt Bernie Sanders. I want to hold up a picture of a rich guy, not Trump, and go, Bernie, is this the one that hurt you? Let's roll out a lineup of rich people and go pick out the person that hurt you. Somebody hurt Bernie Sanders who had money.
You know, I have to say, while it was entertaining with the jabs and the one-liners and the zingers, I don't like this meaner Bernie Sanders. I think Bernie Sanders got this far because of being Bernie Sanders, kind of the when you do the imitation,
yeah.
the friend of the downtrodden.
Where's my soup?
That. I don't like this meaner, edgier side of Bernie Sanders. Do you?
No. Well, listen, the Democrats' main win would be to not sound like the Republicans.
Yeah.
Last night, they sounded more like the Republicans.
Yeah, I agree.
Hey, I got a question. I don't understand how this happened. Ted Cruz talked to our friend Chuck Todd yesterday. And the coverage of it said it was last night in Amherst, which is a suburb of Buffalo, New York. And then last night, Cruz also spoke at a Republican gala in New York City. Now, it's an hour, 1 hour flight. I get that. But in New York City, he did a tape piece for Fallon on The Tonight Show, which tapes at 5:30 in New York City. All right. You can't be in Buffalo because it takes a lot to move a presidential candidate. You got a Secret Service detail, you have traffic concerns, you got to get to the airport, whatever the case may be.
Right.
So how is he in Buffalo and New York City last night?
Was one taped?
Well, it had to be, right?
Didn't he tape the interview?
And there's also the rumor that he is a warlock and he travels by.
Well, I don't doubt that. I mean, you take a look at him. I think Grzanich has got something there.
I think
you need to get your best people on the seventh floor on that.
I think it was taped. I think the Chuck Todd interview.
Well, it has to be.
I think it was.
So yesterday when we talked to Chuck, he must have talked to Count Chocula in the afternoon, huh?
Yeah, and maybe they changed it. You know, maybe he was supposed to do a live interview. They realized because of logistics, it would have to be.
Or
recorded.
Is Chuck misleading us?
No, I don't think.
The Todster. At any rate, Ted Cruz spoke to the Republicans last night in New York City, and they ignored him, which, yeah, that was kind of amusing. Trump and Kasich. Kasich got some good noise in New York last night.
Yeah, he did.
We'll see what happens. I mean, I don't know that he's going to come close to Trump on Tuesday. Trump will win in New York, but he could keep him under 50%. We'll see. Anyway, that's your little political roundup for Friday. Enough of that for now. At 6:16, we'll take a break and come back after traffic. Mary's here looking fabulous. New haircut, Mary?
I did get a haircut.
Yeah, nicely done by you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Had to get a
what
cut
did
off.
Like Sandberg had a haircut yesterday as well. Was it like a merry hair day?
I feel bad. I, you know, she said that my hair looked great. I didn't say anything to her.
Oh.
I didn't Mary, I didn't kind of notice.
I will tell you.
Did you get a lock cut off?
I got to tell you, she will hold a grudge.
I know. Yeah. I feel really bad. It looks great, though, but her hair always looks great.
No,
every
don't
day.
Hey, don't try to make it up.
Her hair does.
Well,
I
agree.
I had her
but
hair.
You listen, you're the one that insulted her.
It's Lou's First Call with Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran. Brought to you by American Weathermakers.
American Weathermakers. We won't be comfortable until you are.
And then they sang.
It's the time
of the show.
Of the show.
Sponsored by American Weathermakers, as previously determined. Good morning, Lou Manfredini.
Good morning, sir.
Are you doing a show somewhere tomorrow?
I am. I'm going to be down at Fox Home Center in Alsip, Illinois.
What are you doing there?
We're going to do the Mr. Fix-It broadcast from 7 to 10 a.m., and it's going to be a wing-ding, shamalama-ding-dong extravaganza. There's supposedly a live band. There's
nice.
Free breakfast.
Nice. Public's welcome?
Everyone's welcome. The first 300 people get a goodie bag.
Okay.
And what I do remember from the last time being there, the catering company made lemon ricotta pancakes.
Lemon ricotta? That sounds pretty good.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
It was so good.
Lemon ricotta pancakes.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even think of that. Would you think of that?
No, I wouldn't. I took one bite, and then the second bite, I just rubbed it on my rear end. I just went directly there, so it went.
They're now selling that in the Duluth Trading Company
right.
catalog.
It's a competition to Chamonix.
Takes care of the bags and puffiness on that side as well.
Exactly.
All right, so that's tomorrow morning, starting at?
7 a.m., and let me see if I get this. 1150 South Cicero in Alsip.
All right, so here's what we're looking for, texters, and we can do this throughout the morning.
Can I just say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was listening to you, and you were talking about the moldy and damp.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then they got replaced by the guys that did the insurance
commercial. Yeah.
That was funny.
Well, I appreciate it. So here's the situation, kids. We are looking for the weirdest Mr. Fixer. We're looking for this from Lou. I said texters. The weirdest request Lou has ever gotten from somebody. You don't have to give me an answer now, just by the end of the segment. So somebody says to Lou, hey, I got this problem at the house.
Oh, no, I have the best one.
Oh, you know already?
Oh, my God.
All right, we'll save it for a second.
Okay.
All right, Joe is in North Aurora. Let's go to Joe. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. How you doing, guys?
We're great. Hey. How about you, Joe?
I'm doing fantastic.
Any problems?
Yes, Lou, we bought a brand new hardwood floors. They're called Asian walnut. And so for the last 3 years, the treatment that we've been doing is we have this hot steam mop,
okay.
And that's what we've been using to clean it. But for some reason, something tells me that water and steam should not be used on wooden floors. So what's the best way to treat them to keep them clean and to keep the shine?
So I'm not these steam cleaners, two things with them. They work. They do a fabulous job of cleaning. But what I found in talking to people is they use them. It's interesting to hear that you've been using them consistently. Most people I know that buy these things say, oh, yeah, I used it for the first month, and then I got to fill it up. I got to plug it in and blah, 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 blah.
It's a lot of work.
Introducing too much moisture to a wood floor, even with a steamer long term, not a good idea. Because you're going to get a lot of expansion and contraction, which will lead to cracking. And in particular with walnut, in the fact that it's such a hard wood, the risk of it cracking is higher. I would not use that on a wood floor. You've got a couple of really good options when it comes to cleaning floors. One of the companies that's kind of the leader in this is called Bona Chemi, B-O-N-A, and a separate word, K-E-M-I. And they make a hardwood floor cleaner that is a neutral-based cleaner that you'll use in conjunction with their microfiber pad. And you quickly spray it on the floor. It will not dull the finish. And it does a terrific job of keeping the floors clean. And then if you're looking to add another finish to it ever, if you say, geez, you know, that steamer sort of dulled this floor a little bit, there's another company that makes a coating that you can put over the top of it called Rejuvenate, which they also make a cleaner, but their coating to freshen up the finish is terrific, and you can find that at your big box stores as well as your local participating Ace stores.
Lou, question from a texter. And by the way, Joe, don't go away because, Joe, you have won an April Air Wi-Fi thermostat allowing you to adjust the temperature of home's air on your smartphone. brought to you by the American Weathermakers, folks. And that's a fun thing, Lou, because you could be like on a business trip and mess with your family.
All the time.
Yeah, turn up the AC, yeah. Turn down the AC.
It's so hot in here.
Yeah.
What did Dad do before he left? And he's back on a beach.
Remember, kids, it's home of the 60-Minute Men. Call 855-95-HVAC. And, of course, we thank American Weathermakers, as always. Text her. In the 847 area code, Lou, how often do you recommend I restain my cedar fence? It's in pretty good condition and was last stained 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's a thing that you just look at. If you start to notice that it's graying or you see some, a little separation here and there, the nice thing about fences, because it's a vertical surface, the staining lasts a lot longer. And what you'll be amazed at, if you hit it with a pressure washer properly, it cleans up very quickly and looks beautiful. And, it's not unheard of that you could get 6, 7, 8 years before you have to restain a cedar fence.
From the bear, Lou, how do I get fur off my couch?
So this is a funny thing.
It just occurred to me that Sandberg and Jake don't know the story. I've been fighting bear in Illinois for a long time.
Oh, yeah, right.
And Lou and I started this a couple of years ago,
right.
And we have regular bear texters.
You started
texters.
It. I just go along with it.
Right. And we have regular bear texters who text us in bear questions.
You can pluralize bear, by the way. It's not like moose.
That's not?
You can pluralize bear. Bears, yeah,
bears.
Sure. Yeah.
We got a bunch of bears?
Like the bears.
Like the bears.
The Chicago
got
bears.
Got a whole lot of bear?
Da burger.
Got a bunch of bear.
Burger bear.
Can you ask Lou what's the proper way to install vinyl replacement casement windows?
Oh,
I live in New Lenox. Well, I would say by calling someone who does that.
Well, right. I mean, you can install them yourself, but what's very important with window installation, if you're doing replacement windows, is you've got to prepare the opening, and then you got to make sure that you're doing the proper waterproofing with waterproof membranes and flashing to go around it so that it doesn't leak. But you need a. This isn't the kind of thing that just the average person, the average Steve. I mean, not that a Steve Cochran is the average person.
No, I'm below average.
I wasn't going there. But, you know, this isn't something that you're like, hey, I think I'm going to do my own windows. Because if you screw that up, it's going to leak like crazy.
Yeah, and it was like the siding one, windows ones, guys that put the windows in my house are great. And I'd never seen it done. But it's pretty cool. Cut a hole in the wall, pop the window out, put the new one in, seal up the hole. They're good. They're like a pit crew for windows.
Yeah.
They're fast.
Yeah, they're quick.
It's amazing.
When they do it all the time, it's, you know, they've got they know what they're doing. When the windows are measured properly, they're going in the right opening, it works great.
Well, and these guys cleaned up, too. You couldn't tell they were there. They'd be good criminals. 815 texter, hey, Lou, InstaFlow rocks.
It does. It's a drain cleaner that has little chips that if you have a slow drain, you put it over, put boiling water on, and it starts to sizzle like a witch's brew and just eats everything up, and now the drain works.
Good times. 630, best one was Lou's squirrel that would climb a woman's... Is this the one you were going to tell me?
No, but that's a good one,
Lou's
too.
Lou's squirrel that would climb a woman's sliding screen door...
And pee in the house.
And pee... Wow.
It would jump from the patio table onto the screen... And pee through the screen in the house.
Wow.
I mean, it's almost funny.
That's a renegade squirrel.
Yeah, crazy squirrel.
Holy mackerel.
Right.
And give me yours. Here's Lou's story of the oddest request he ever had for help for Mr. Fix-It.
5 years ago, maybe, we get a call from a guy, kind of a low talker on the phone. He's like, yeah, I've got this house. I believe it was in Wisconsin. And I've got a 1968 Corvette in the basement.
In the basement.
And I don't know how to get it out. And I was like, excuse me? And the guy was dead serious. And so then I get all these phone calls and emails from people saying that there was a house built years ago. This is a pristine, like, 1968 Corvette that was put in the basement of this house, and they built the house around it. And then as I was trying to get more information out of there, I'm like, wait a minute. You know, I'm all interested. He hung up.
Was he a criminal?
I don't know.
Have you heard?
Never heard anything more about it.
But do you know it exists? It wasn't just nuts?
Well, because I got all this affirmation from all these listeners.
Really?
Oh, yeah, I live in the neighborhood. I've heard of it. I've seen it through the window, through the basement, and evidently this pristine Corvette.
So if we understand this correctly, the people that built the house put the vet in the basement and built a house over the top of it?
Right, like building a bank where they put the safe in the basement before they built the bank.
Wow, how about that?
Right.
That's pretty wild.
And no way to get it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, you got to take it apart piece by piece right. by piece and then put it back together.
Or have someone come dig on the side of the house and cut open the foundation so you can build a ramp to drive it out.
I like the idea that the guy called and thought you'd have a product at Ace that would work for that.
Right. Like, is there a caulk I can use?
Spray it with Remove-A-Vet.
Right, exactly. Right. It works on ants and Corvettes.
Good luck tomorrow. Where's the show again?
111 East, 111 something in South Cicero in Alsip at Fox Home Center.
You get to Alsip, you'll find it.
Yeah, just go to Alsip, ask for Fox Home Center. And remember, the lemon ricotta crepes or pancakes, whatever they made.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Boy. Now Lou's going to wander off in the woods and do the Channel 9 thing.
Would you like something to drink?
I'll have water, please.
I'll have water, too, but with lemon.
I'll have a Sam Adams.
I'll have a Sam Adams, too.
Samuel Adams. Always a good decision.
That's a rare piece of tape from our founding fathers. Paul Revere was about to ride through. Of course, he stopped in for another Sam Adams.
I walk 4 to 7 miles of barbed wire. I got a cobra snake for a necktie. A brand new house all over rural side. And it's a made out of rattlesnake hide. Got a brand new tin that been built on top. And it's a made out of human skull. Come on, take a little walk with me, baby, and tell me who do you love?
Jim Cook.
Who do you love?
Founded the Boston Beer Company. Brews Sam Adams. Got a book out called Quench Your Own Thirst, Business Lessons Learned Over a Beer or Two. Been a long time, Mr. Cook. Nice to talk to you again.
Good morning.
Congratulations on all the success.
Well, you know, it's less than meets the eye. Writing this book was kind of a humbling experience because, you know, I started brewing Sam Adams in my kitchen 32 years ago, and people always ask me kind of, you know, when I meet them in bars, did you learn anything? You know, what, do you have any words of wisdom? And I realized, well, when I wrote the book, there's 40 chapters in it, and that was 32 years of learning. I realized, geez, you know, I only learned one thing a year. That's kind of depressing.
Well, that's just the stuff that made the book. You learn more than that. And if anybody buys into the idea, and why wouldn't you, the great conversation over a couple of beers can lead to great ideas and greater things, or in Dave's case, over six beers. You know, it's the type of thing that
lame ideas.
That one, bad ideas as well. Some really bad ideas, as a matter of fact. But the book, Quench Your Own Thirst, Business Lessons Learned Over a Beer or Two, I assume out and available everywhere today, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it's kind of a little weird for me because, you know, I make beer. That's what I've done for 32 years. And so writing a book is a new experience. It's kind of an unconventional business book because it's really just stories and the lessons that came out of them. And I mean, this is, you know, I make beer, so some of those stories are a little out there. Some of them involve felonies, but I had to like clean it up for the book. And, you know, and I learned as much probably from my failures. So the book has, you know, not only some of the successes of, you know, starting Sam Adams, helping to lead this whole craft beer revolution, but also a lot of failures and screw-ups that I learned from as well.
Well, it's nice of you to share the dark times as well. Jim won't remember this, but back in the 90s, well, you may remember it. It depends on how, you know, sideways you were. But in the 90s, the Loop here, when I was a part of the Loop, big promoters of Sam Adams, and Kevin in particular, Kevin Matthews.
Yeah, and he came to the brewery one year, and we did a live remote
from
the brewery. That was a hoot. He can actually broadcast under the influence. I was impressed.
Kev's entire career has been under the influence. I really salute your success. You mentioned the craft brewing thing. Craft brewing, I keep seeing stories about how hip craft brewing is. Does that ever annoy you? You've been doing it since the 80s.
No, it doesn't annoy me at all because, you know, when I started Sam Adams, one of the reasons I named my beer after the revolutionary, you know, the Sam Adams, the patriot, he was the instigator of the American Revolution. And I wanted Sam Adams, the beer, to start its own revolution, to start a craft beer revolution because, you know, when I started Sam Adams, everybody thought American beer was just cheap and watery and fizzy and in a can and you could crush it on your forehead, and nobody respected America's brewing tradition, but I come from a long line of brewmasters. In fact, my dad went to brewmaster school right there in Chicago at the Siebel Institute on West Peterson. And my grandfather also went to brewmaster school in Chicago. And I knew that you could make great beer here in the United States. And now this revolution that a few crazies like myself started 30-some years ago is teaching the rest of the world how to make beer. And, you know, in the book, there's a chapter about, you know, competition and colleagues. And as a craft brewer, I don't think of all my fellow craft brewers as competitors. So I'm not annoyed that there's lots of them. I view them as colleagues that, you know, we're all trying to do the same thing, which is make great beer and re-educate American beers and create a beer culture here. And it's nice that we're helping each other. In fact,
well, it's very nice of you to say that, because if I were in your position, I'd be looking to crush them. Andrea and Dave Ennett, I want you both to get a question in for Jim before we run out of time. The book's called Quench Your Own Thirst, Business Lessons Learned Over a Beer or Two. Get it wherever you get books. And by the way, get two, because the first one you're going to get schnockered, mm-hmm. and you're going to forget where you put it.
It's probably right. True.
Andrea.
Hey, good morning, Jim. Question for you. You know how a bottle of wine ages and gets better over time? Is that the same with beer, too, or do you have to drink that pretty quick, otherwise it goes bad?
Yeah, beer is the opposite of wine that way. Beer is liquid bread. You know, beer is a food. So beer is perishable. Roughly, beer lasts for 4 or 5 months from the time you put it in the bottle. There's a few weird exceptions, but 99% of all beer should be consumed. The fresher, the better. So it's not like wine. It does not improve with age. It degrades. And we spend a lot of money and a lot of care making sure that we pull our beer off the shelves if it is past its freshness date. In fact, on the left side of every bottle, we pioneered putting consumer legible expiration dates on
the beer.
Yeah.
Very cool. Didn't know that.
Yeah, and I love that. Liquid beer. I've never heard the description. Dave, last question from you.
Yeah, and Jim, big fan.
love your beer.
I can tell. No wonder you sound so intelligent.
Well, thank you. The idea of pairing food with wine has been around for a long time, but it seems like pairing food with beer has kind of been an offshoot of the craft brewing explosion. Is that something that you saw coming when you first started in brewing in your kitchen 30-some years ago?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I started doing beer dinners almost as soon as I started brewing Sam Adams. And to me, beer pairs better with food than wine does. You know, wine, and wine people hate this, but to me as a brewer, wine is boring. You know, because it's not that different. Let's face it, red wine tastes like red wine. You know, that's why you have to be a wine snob to tell the difference between a Pinot and a Merlot.
Yeah, you're never gonna have you're never gonna have a real beer drinker go, oh, hints of oakiness and a touch of attitude, and I think there's Crayola in there. You're just gonna drink the beer and enjoy it.
Well, look at it this way: when you go to a beer tasting, you know, people actually they drink the beer, they swallow. You go to a wine tasting and people spit it out. Now, what does that tell
you? You know what? That's it. That's it right there. The book's called Quench Your Own Thirst, Business Lessons Learned Over a Beer or Two. It's Jim Cook, founder of the Boston Beer Company, brewer of Sam Adams. Great to reconnect with you, sir. Hold the line for me, and good luck with the rest of the tour on the book. Have I done traffic yet? I must be drunk.
Woo!
Woo!
Ow!
Love that money.
Yeah. Money, 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 money. Elise Glink knows more about money than the rest of us. She's forgotten more about money than I'll ever know. And her particular area of expertise is the green money, the foldable money. Familiar with that money? The FHFA, they regulate Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. We're talking about doing principal reduction loans. It's significant news for homeowners in that category. And Elise is going to give us a brief on it here. All right, we're taking notes. What do we need to know, Glinkster?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of people are saying this is a little bit too little and a little bit too late for most of the people who could have been helped in the foreclosure crisis. But if you kind of look where the foreclosure numbers are, where they are now, which is very, very low relative to where they were in 2008, 9, 10, 11, and 12, you could kind of make a case for it. So yesterday I get this email from the FHFA saying, stand by, we have a major announcement coming. I am not kidding you. That is exactly the email that I got. So at noon, I sent them an email saying, okay, new, anything happening? And then about 10 minutes later, they sent this email out that basically said, we think 33,000 people in the country can benefit from this. And what they plan to do is they plan to, for anybody who's 90 days late as of March 1st, 2016,
right,
if you have an unpaid principal balance of $250,000 or less, right, that's how much your mortgage is, and if the value of your mortgage is more than 115% of what the property is worth. So in other
words, you're underwater.
Right, you're way underwater. Then they're going to help you. And they expect only 33,000 borrowers to be helped. And it's not that that's a small number, Steve. It's just that...
Well, they missed it.
Really?
They missed it. They absolutely missed it. And for the people that are still in trouble, maybe it doesn't need to be 115%. And maybe you can find another way. The thing that always amazes me is, at least when the government tries to do something right in regards to making up for previous wrongs, the right they try to do is aggravating, and because it's a Band-Aid and it's not a full fix. I don't know if we blame that on Congress. I don't know if we blame that on particular agencies. But, yeah, they should have been there in 2008. The question is, what do they learn from this to go forward? And based on this, not enough.
I don't know that they've learned anything. I wish, you know, here's what I was calling for like 5-6 years ago when I was getting hundreds and hundreds of people emailing me asking for help because they lost their jobs and they couldn't afford to pay their mortgages.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
a
the
problem.
Truth is that if you have a job, you want to pay your mortgage because you just want to live your life, right? And what I said to the government at the time was when interest rates were about 5.25% or so, I said, why don't you just refinance everybody from the government at 4% or less? This week, we hit the lowest interest rates we've had in 3 years. It's what's going on in the markets is a little bit nutsy.
Sure.
And yet, you could refinance today a 30-year fixed rate loan for under 3.5%. So asking the government to do it for 4%, even back then, was not that big a deal, and still, they couldn't seem to get it together to do something that simple. So this is just another little Band-Aid. I think the people who need this the most are not going to be anywhere aware of it, and it'll expire October 15th. If you haven't filed by then, it goes away. And let me say again, only 33,000 people can be helped, which is not that it's a small number. It's just that when you've got 4.3 million people who are underwater, it's a small number.
But yeah, by comparison, it absolutely is. All right, let's hope we've got a chunk of that 33,000 listening. I'm sure we do. What's the best place for them to get information on this?
You should go to makinghomeaffordable.gov, and I can tweet that out a little bit later on today.
Yeah.
And just look for, you need to be a Fannie Mae or a Freddie Mac loan. You can find that out on Making Home Affordable, and then contact your lender. They should have information on it.
Thanks for giving us the good news in the midst of hand slapping for the people that are half getting it done. Hope you have a great weekend. But people need to follow you all the time. And where do they do that?
At Glink on Twitter is the easiest way, or you can find me on Facebook.
That's Elise Glink, and we're back with the news next, 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Love these guys. Earth, Wind, and Fire, they knew? They're still killing it. It's 7:11 in the morning. This is show number 629. At Cochran Show, Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. In the rush to judgment on the Chicago Police Department, headlines are screaming racism. And from the top of the department to the bottom. And it's patently unfair. And in highlighting failures of the police department, none of the 99% of good that gets done is highlighted as well. Are there racist cops? Of course there are. There's racist cops. There's racist talk show hosts. There's racist people in every facet of life. But the vast majority of your CPD are doing a good thing, and it's wrong to paint them in a blanket way that they've been painted this week. There's a secondary level to this, and that's that the panel that did the judgment of the police department that's getting so much play this week, claiming that a code of silence was a natural outgrowth of the collective bargaining agreement the police had. So we wanted to talk to a cop about it, and Sergeant Jim Ade joins us now. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
And I'm doing fine. Thank you for the service to the city and beyond.
Well, thank you for letting us have a voice this morning, and thanks for the compliment of the 99% of the police officers and sergeants that are out there doing the job.
Yeah, and I would think, and I don't want to speak for you here, but I would think nothing would piss you off more than a racist cop or a bad cop who puts a bad mark on you.
It puts a bad mark on all of us. As I've said before, there's no place for racism in our profession. Does it exist? Yes, it exists everywhere, like you said earlier.
All right, so let's talk about this collective bargaining piece. All the collective bargaining agreements do is provide due process and disciplinary procedures, is your point of view. What's theirs?
Well, their point is that some of the disciplinary processes that we have in place give our officers a free rein to run out on the street and do whatever they want with no fear of repercussions. And that couldn't be any farther from the truth.
The code of silence, which, you know, is a generalization as well, but the code of silence that goes on, is that something you experience more or less than a cop having to turn a buddy in because he's turns out he's a bad cop?
Yeah, in my experience, and I've been on the job for 29 years, you haven't had too much of that experience at all. I mean, I haven't seen, you know, do some officers go a little over the edge? Yeah, but are they criminal? No. You know, so it's to turn another policeman in, it does happen. It's happened before, and it'll happen again when somebody does something that's a violation of the law. The officers are responsible for turning them in, yes.
And by the way, I know this for a fact, because I know a lot of cops. I know cops that will get their partner's help because they think their partner's getting close to the edge. Prior to an incident, take proactive and preemptive action. I mean, you know that happens, Jim.
Well, that, you're right, and that's one of the things that I preach. You know, to our members, you know, we're responsible for mentoring and supervising the frontline officers. I mention all the time, you got to take care of your guys. If you see that they need help, just ask. Sometimes all you have to do is ask.
As head of the police sergeants union, the collective bargaining does what specifically for you guys?
Well, it develops our work conditions, our due process when it comes to disciplinary matters, you know, our benefit packages, things like that. That's really all it does. There's nothing in there that says that, you know, this is how you can not turn in another officer, or this is how you can, you know, get away from doing your job. It's not in there.
Yeah, and by the way, in the shooting of Laquan McDonald, which is, you know, where most of this stuff comes from, and the reporting from it that shows that dash cam audio was turned off and that several cops kept their mouths shut and all of that, I'm not blaming the public for developing a generalized view, but I'm telling you, you got to open your eyes wider and know that every segment has problems and all those problems should be cleaned up. And yeah, the police department wants this cleaned up too. You absolutely want this cleaned up.
Right. And, you know, the report that was authored by, you know, Lori Lightfoot's committee, they go on to talk about how, you know, racism exists because 75% of the street stops are conducted in African-American neighborhoods. Well, if you look at the statistics, 75% of the homicides happen in African-American neighborhoods. Isn't that where you would want more of your police resources allocated?
Exactly.
And yes, if you're there, it's going to happen. And it's a common sense approach that nobody's taking.
Sergeant, question for you. Thank you, first of all, for all the work that you do. I mean, I see all the beat officers out in the streets every weekend. How do you reestablish trust between a community now that perhaps maybe used to feel more comfortable seeing officers on the street and maybe now some doubting because of all the events that have happened over the past year or two?
Well, you talk about all the events that happened. It's been one event that's been blown out of proportion. And I mean, it's a horrific video of the Laquan McDonald shooting. But that's been overplayed and overplayed and overplayed and overplayed. you know, I asked someone else that in an interview, I said, when do you see the video of the officer bringing the lost child home?
Right.
Why isn't that played over and over and over?
Well, but in balance.
It's very disproportionate.
In balance, the good news versus the bad. No, it's not. In balance, the good news versus the bad news is not the same. Now, the argument on the journalism side is you couldn't. There's not enough time in the day to show good cops doing good things. But the story being told the way it's being told, Jim, it is unfair.
I agree, and I think that the way the press has handled this is painted us all in a bad light. People see that, and then they think, well, all cops are bad.
But if you had the backing from the city, and do you feel the mayor has your back?
I know he tries, but I believe that, you know, the mayor has constituents out there that are angry, and he's trying to appease them. And I believe he's trying to appease the angry members of the public on the backs of police officers.
So your bottom line here is just take a broader view, please. And do your homework and realize that the majority of cops are good cops, or is there more to say than that?
Well, yeah, I agree with you. 99% of the policemen are out there doing a great job, you know. And you say to reestablish trust, that's kind of a two-way street. You know, the public has to trust us, and we have to be able to trust the public. You know, it goes back and forth.
You mean in regards to people shooting video of an arrest and putting it out, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean they'll put out videos from their cell phones, or the whole issue about don't talk to the police.
Oh yeah,
we're out there trying to solve crimes and try to help people, and they don't want to help us in turn.
Yeah, the no snitch policy.
It becomes frustrating, right? It becomes frustrating.
I appreciate you coming on, and stay safe.
Okay, thanks for having me,
Sergeant Jim Aide, and I want to make sure I get his title right again. Head of the Sergeants Union, correct? Is that right?
I think it is. I just want to say one thing, too. On a personal note, the press should not be blamed for this video being shown, because this is regarding a criminal matter, and the officer who shot Laquan McDonald is facing murder charges now.
No, I understand
so
that.
So this isn't a case of the press getting happy and showing video. I agree with you a thousand times,
but it's overshown. Shown again and again and again and again and again. You don't need the video every time you tell the story, and overshown. And by the way, I think it's an insult to the family as well when you show the video over and over again.
I agree, and I want to commend
failures on every level.
Channel 9 and other stations, other
Pretty
TV
right.
stations, right, who have either not shown it or not shown it in its entirety before that moment that we've all seen.
Channel 9 made that choice early, didn't
Very
it?
Very early on, yep.
Yeah. Your taxes done?
I think so. I just turned
Minor at the accountant's. Dave turned his taxes in August, and he still hasn't heard from his accountant.
But I'm confident.
We have an accountant in studio from Plant Moran who is going to give us some basic tax advice. He can't fix your problems, but if you have a question at 312-981-7200, text it in, and I'll get to as many as I can.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
But you were supposed to get me a refund.
You can't get a refund. Your warranty expired 2 years ago.
So we're going to make the post office pay for my new stereo now?
It's a write-off for them.
How is it a write-off?
They just write it off.
Write it off what?
Jerry, all these big companies, they write off everything.
You don't even know what a write-off is.
Do you?
No, I don't.
But they do. And they're the ones writing it off.
Lewis Sands in studio from Plant Moran. And thank you for doing this. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you being here. What's the number one question you get the most of right now?
How much do I owe? and why?
And
what did you do wrong?
Right. We were talking off the air about home offices a second ago. Mm-hmm. So let's go through some general questions, and you can text yours in at 312-981-7200. Myth or fact, a home office is a flag and could lead to an audit?
Mostly fact. I mean, there's no one thing that's going to get you audited or not, but it's statistically shown that a home office is an area that's, first of all, it's often abused, and that's well known. And as that's the case, and often poorly supported. It's an area where if there's a large number on a tax return, there's a real good chance that it's going to get pulled for audit. Absolutely.
And the basic thing for a home office is it has to be used specifically for a business or business activities that you conduct out of the home. You can't have it, you know, your plants in there and the kids' play sets in there or whatever else, right?
Yeah, that's right. You know what? It's a good idea to just treat it as if it were a separate office entirely. And that's where, listen, everybody has some sort of work that they do at home, but that doesn't necessarily make it a home office. And you know, it's the old you know, hogs get slaughtered, pigs live long lives on the farm. You can take off a piece of your internet or a phone line or a separate, but right. trying to abuse it and take everything is where people run a risk. Now you can have your kids sitting there playing if you want to, but to have a separate dedicated space and support it and with good records showing that is the best way. Listen, an audit's not necessarily the worst thing in the world if you're being honest about it. It's a nuisance, but proving something that you're doing right is fine. It's if you're doing something wrong where you're going to have an issue.
Andre, how much time did you do after your audit?
I didn't do any time, but I did get audited. You know what was my red flag, though? It was the year of the homeowner tax credit, and I had just purchased my condo, so I got a nice big refund that year, and they flagged me. I'm assuming, because that's the only...
There's any number of reasons, but that you're probably in the right area, and you've kind of touched on an area more so even than a home office. There's, you know, everything's computerized now, and they're looking for material deviations. You know, it happens. Mm-hmm. You know, Chris Bryant 3 years ago versus now is going to have a material, you know, spike in his income. But they're looking for areas where it goes up or down. And if your home office deduction was $30 last year, and you had a big raise this year, and all of a sudden it's $30,000, and then
so wild income fluctuations combined with deductions.
Absolutely.
I think I scared the auditor, though, because I save receipts. I save everything. I walked in with a big box, and she went, "Oh, okay." I had to pay a lot back, but
by the way, I've been disorganized and procrastinated my entire life, and at the age of 55, I've decided I'm probably not going to fix this anytime soon. I've tried every system imaginable. I've done different things. There's no one fix for everybody, right? It depends on who you are.
It, absolutely right. I mean, it's a complete no-brainer to some people, and it's like pulling teeth to others, and you nailed it. It's about procrastination. It's about being organized, and it's just about support, you know? And you know, you were mentioning before, your typical IRS, you know, there's furloughs, there's cutbacks at the IRS. The typical agent is, you know, they're overworked, and they have, you know, dozens, if not more, cases at any given time. The easy case is the one where someone has absolutely no support, or someone comes in with a big shoebox full because, you know, highest and best use. You know, this person, you know, at least on the surface, appears to have their stuff together and is supported, and you're a lot more likely to go through that process smoothly than someone that just doesn't know.
Not that anybody wants to be audited, but it was such an, I guess, intriguing or interesting process, because she was literally going through everything, saying, "All right, you can do this, not this. Who's this person?" I mean, they really do.
Well, I mean, at some point, it's about, you know, getting return on quote unquote the investment of that person being there. You know, I mean, if they're going to spend the time there, they are a person. They do answer to a boss, unless you're completely squeaky clean.
So, if they're auditing you, they should audit. yeah, that seems to make sense.
While they're there, and you know, especially if it was a nice new condo, if it's a nice place, and they're coming to visit you, they might stay a few days. It's better than someplace else they may have to go after.
Must be tough to run a cartel if you're a, you know, major international drug dealer or thief at this point, you know, to get your taxes filed. Emancipation Day means we file on Monday. We got a text from a wife of an accountant, said, "Are you as annoyed about the extra day as I am?"
As she is, or as her husband?
Yeah, she is, I suppose.
Because no,
for you guys, you get an extra couple of days.
Extra, and we'll take them. You know, I mean, it's the sort of thing where you can tell people,
imagine.
You know, every day of the week. If April 15th is tattooed on most people's brains as tax day, so it's not exactly an official deception if we don't affirmatively remind all our clients, wait 3 more days before you send us all that information.
Right.
If they think it's the 15th, we're done a lot. With a lot more of our work 3 days early this year than we have been in the past as a result.
I won't ask you what you're doing this weekend because I know. we got to get to the big story next, and then we'll come back with more questions. We're lining those up now, your basic tax questions. Lewis can't fix them all, but he can give you some guidance. We'll run through as many as we can after this on 720 WGN. Lewis Sands is here from Plant Moran. We're talking taxes. And he'll be up from now until Monday, making sure his clients are prepared. There is a general divorce question here from one of our listeners, Lewis, and newly divorced. So it may be too broad a topic, but are there specific things that newly divorced people ought to think about and relate to their taxes?
Oh, absolutely.
Oops, wrong mic. Sorry, now Troy.
Yeah, absolutely. The typically, the first year that someone's divorced, it's, I mean, anytime that there's a change, the first year you get married, it's a change. The first year you get divorced, it's a change. And oftentimes, it's what your marital status is at the end of the year. So if you get divorced on December 30th, you're divorced for that year. But there, a lot of times, there's difficulties. If there's children involved, who's going to claim the kids on their returns? And, it, you know, there's the division of assets. And was there a transfer of funds throughout the course of the year? Did you have to liquidate things? And are there a lot more gains? There's a lot. It's a very disruptive year from a financial standpoint. And a lot of times, the majority of that is actually, litigated. And in the separation agreement, you get the kids, alimony versus child support.
So a final divorce decree would lay that out?
Yes.
Okay, so that's the thing you got to show your accountant, right? That's the thing you that's what go look. Here's the roadmap.
The best thing to tell your accountant is that you got divorced, first of all, because
right.
You don't want to get your return back and say I forgot to tell you that that's happened. But yes, that separation agreement that's absolutely critical to get your taxes right.
We live in a part-time economy now, there are some folks who work more or less than they used to. In most cases, a little less, or maybe they're making less. Tax question here related to younger folks. My son's in high school, has a part-time job. Does he pay state and federal tax? There's a minimum number you have to hit. Is that right?
There is. And typically, I mean, it's if your son's in high school, then he's obviously going to be, well, not obviously, but more than likely going to be a dependent on her tax return. But if he's right. got a summer job, if it's a job where he's working at, for example, at McDonald's or something where there's withholding, whether or not he has to file is oftentimes not even the issue. You'll want to, because if you don't reach that minimum amount, $4,000, for example, you'll still file and you'll get that $250 back that was withheld. You just make sure that he doesn't claim himself on his tax return because he's still with his parents.
Well, this is interesting, and I think a lot of people deal with this. My son lives at home. So do all of his friends. He has a job, but my husband and I support him almost completely in regards to student loans and his food and shelter and his cell phone, et cetera. Is that something we can take advantage of for taxes?
None of the actual expenses of raising the kids are a deduction, but from a dependent standpoint, your children are your dependents until they're 18 years old. Under 24 if they're full time students. I didn't hear that in the question. Maybe yes, maybe no. Yeah, but those are the easiest ones. People don't even have to necessarily be relatives to be dependents if they meet certain criteria. If living there, it sounds like they're ticking off a lot of those boxes.
Yeah.
Living there, providing more than half the support, and then how much that person earns. I mean, if he's making $100,000 a year. Then, well, first of all, you're probably not providing more than half of his support, and he's making too much. There are a whole host of qualifications, but it sounds like
so dependent status. Just because a kid lives in your house doesn't mean they're necessarily dependent.
Correct.
So, therefore, is it income? Is that the scorecard?
That's the big income and age. It's literally are they a dependent? Are they there because they need to be? Or is it, I've seen certainly more so than when I was coming right out of school, a lot more, first of all, you said kid, is it really a kid? It's a kid if they're 26 years old, but it might be convenience. They might be saving.
Well, but here's what we know. Post 2008, there's almost an entire generation of kids who didn't get a fair shot at their first job who are living at home with their parents.
Oh, absolutely.
Between 22 and 30, there's tons of kids who are doing that.
Right. And if they have a full-time job and they're making a lot and all those other, then they probably are not dependents.
Okay. And obviously that's another check with your accountant.
Right.
That's another question. Received an adjusted W-2 from my employer with a different allocation of tips, which is about $4,000 more than the original W-2 from 3 weeks ago. Already filed my taxes. What do I need to do and what are the consequences?
The consequence, answer them backwards, the consequences are that's going to be reported to the government. So you're going to owe the tax on $4,000 more. You're going to have to go back and, you have two options. You can go back and amend that return. That's the only option. Even though once you file your return, you can't go back and file it again since it's before the deadline. Once it's in and accepted, he or she would have to go back and amend. Or you can wait for the notice to come, and it'll say you owe $800 plus.
But then you're subject to penalties, right?
Exactly. But I mean, it's a small amount of penalties and interest, and that you offset that versus how much you want to pay someone to do it or the aggravation of doing it. But
so what, in a case like this, what is the story? So whatever restaurant they're working at, whatever, screwed up, and then they decided it was more than they thought it was?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Which is unfair to the server.
Oh, without a doubt, it's unfair.
But unfair doesn't mean you don't pay what you owe.
Lots of things are unfair. And that happens, and it happens all the time. We see not just a corrected W-2 oftentimes is really not that common. We see corrected 1099s all the time. And there's in the rush to get the 1099 interest, dividends, they get it out, and you'll file your return, and you'll get a corrected. It happens. There's nothing you can do. The only thing I would suggest is if you got that W-2 early, and it just a couple weeks later, then they realized they made a mistake. Well, there was no way that you could have helped that. If you got your W-2 on January 31st and didn't bother to look at it until now, and you realize that they have your Social Security number wrong, or they added a zero or they shouldn't, doing your we're going back to the procrastination issue. Getting on top of it early, they can correct that, and you won't have to go through the hoops of amending.
We'll do a quick traffic here, and then I'll ask you a couple more questions. I want to get the staff in, too, if anybody else has questions on the staff, because a lot of criminals work for me. 312-981-7200 is the number. Again, the guest is Lewis Sands in studio from Plant Moran. We're trying to bang out as many tax questions as we can here. Another texter, unemployed for over 2 years, living off my savings, haven't touched the investments. Do I need to file?
No. I mean,
it depends on the investment income, right?
Right. I mean, living off savings, that's after tax dollars. So you really, that's not generating any. But if you've got income, taxable income that's coming in, whether or not you're spending it or dipping into it, that's, you know, that doesn't change the fact. It would depend on the amounts of the taxable income. So,
Andrea.
All right, medical question for you. Can you write off doctor visits, health care that you pay out of pocket from work, or does it have to be at a certain level, income level?
The good news is yes, you can write that off. Dentists, doctors, prescriptions, eyeglasses, all these sorts of things. The bad news is as you touched on, it has to exceed a certain income threshold. So if you have health insurance and it's just the amounts that you're going out of pocket, very seldom do we see people with actually that clear that, because it's currently 10% of your adjusted gross income. So, you know, it's I think something pretty bad has to happen in a year for you to.
How about a root canal?
No, probably not. I would be surprised if that reached the level where you would get it. I mean,
hypothetically speaking, yeah, a friend of mine, of course.
What we always say is we always err on the side of include, put it all in
and
see if it kicks out. But that in and of itself doesn't sound like it would be enough to generate any kind of deduction. Because like I say, depending on your income, if it's high enough, then 10%, small percentages of big numbers are big numbers, right.
Well, the percentage piece of it goes to the larger question in general of business deductions. There's a million rules when it comes to business deductions, I know. Mm. But business deductions have to rise to a certain level or they're not worth anything to you, right?
Well, that's right. Again, and that speaks to just the larger issue generally is the key with filing, whether it's an individual or a business tax return, is to try and get the best deduction or the best tax treatment for what it is that you're doing. You're not going to do something solely for the tax. That's the tail wagging dog. You're not going to do that. You could save $1 million by spending $3 million.
Sure,
that's not prudent.
Doesn't work that way.
No, right. So
it's
not
smart.
Yeah,
gas is cheaper in Iowa. I'll drive to Iowa.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. AMT. What is it? And why do we hate it?
AMT stands for Alternative Minimum Tax, and we hate it because it adds to a lot of people's tax returns.
Okay.
It's a little bit, I don't want to get too sad. It's gotten away from what was its intended purpose. The purpose, think of it, the easiest way to describe it without getting too much into the weeds here for put everyone to sleep this early in the morning, but think 28%. So if you're making wages and interest and all these things that are at above that rate, you're not going to hit AMT no matter what your numbers are.
Okay.
If you've got a lot of income that's at the lower rates, maybe capital gains, maybe qualified dividends, and you could have 15, 20%, they'll start adding back deductions, typically your state tax payments, these things, to try to get you up to this was your tax. We're going to try. It's too low. We're going to try to get you up to an alternative minimum tax and effectively shooting for 28.
So it's the IRS effort to try to make it fair for everybody.
Yeah, that's originally how it started, and that was great. But the levels are arcane. They're too low.
The math is goofy.
When they originally instilled it, it was aiming for people that were, you know, top echelon, and now it's hitting a lot more middle class people. So that's why we hate it.
You mentioned medical stuff, Andrea. Obamacare has changed a lot of tax rules. Are we being taxed on the health insurance we pay for at work now?
Well, no, you're not being taxed on the health insurance you're paying for at work. The health insurance is, first of all, new in 2015. Everyone's getting a form that you have to confirm, unless you meet some sort of an exemption, that you had health care. And if you don't, then there's penalties for that. But that's really not the most people think of Obamacare. It's adding a certain amount of tax on top of everything else when you exceed certain limits. So what it's doing is it's adding, 0.9% to, wages over $200,000. And it's adding Medicare taxes. So what it is it's you're paying additional tax to pay for the health insurance for everybody.
Again, it's the government's math.
Yes.
Not our math. Are Illinois property taxes a deduction for federal and state tax? Is there a phase-out level?
Illinois property taxes, Illinois real estate tax is a deduction, sure.
Okay.
If it's your residence, there's a property tax credit that you'll get on your Illinois state return on top of that, which is great. About phase-outs, itemized deductions – In, as a general rule, you get them as a deduction, but as your income starts to climb, they start to whittle away 3% for every 1,000 you go over certain levels, and those taxes are in that bucket that start to get whittled.
Yeah, not to take money out of you guys, but I know TurboTax does a nice job of doing that math for you as well, if that's your route that people choose.
Sure.
Yeah. IRA versus 401k, you can have one, you can't have both.
You can have both, but you can't have deductible for
right.
both.
If you're going to take a deduction on a 401k, you can't do the IRA.
Right, and that's you lead us right into an excellent point, because we're here, 100 and something days into 2016. You can, if you're not part of your employer's 401k plan, you can still make a deductible IRA contribution for 2015 if you haven't filed your taxes.
And do it as late as Monday if you get it filed,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And last question, because people do need to file an extension in all likelihood if they're this far down the road and they're just getting their records and stuff together, the general rule for an extension is file it and pay what you think you owe?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The buzzword, it's an extension of time to file, not an extension of time to pay.
But for people who are freaked out, go, I don't know how much I owe. How do you just estimate it to the best of your ability?
That's why if you knew exactly what it was, you'd file the returns.
Right,
so,
right.
So it's an estimate. And
it's kind of a good faith move, right? You're showing the government you're trying.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, too, is there's late there's a whole host of penalties. There's late filing. There's late payment. File it. So you avoid that late filing and do the best that you can from a payment standpoint.
Remember when you bailed me out of jail when I didn't know all that?
I didn't think you were going to talk about that.
Did I say that out loud? Really appreciate your work. Plam Moran has been a great partner with WGN off and on for years, so we appreciate that as well. We're going to let you go back to work now.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Nice to see you. You going to see your family anytime before Monday, or you'll see them later?
Hopefully. Hopefully.
Lewis, you're a good man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lewis Sands. Let's take a break, come back. Got a quick plug for something I'm doing Saturday night, tomorrow night, and then we'll get to the news on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
The future is now. Soon every American home will integrate their television, phone, and computer. You'll be able to visit the Louvre on one channel or watch female mud wrestling on another. You can do your shopping at home or play Mortal Kombat with a friend in Vietnam. There's no end to the possibility.
I was going to call my cable guy last night, find out where he was, and hurt him. My cable was doing this cool thing last night where it shut down about every 30 seconds. That was fun.
I had a similar problem a few weeks ago.
So I had to go reboot my box. This is the title of the song, Reboot Your Box.
We should all do that every now and again.
8:13 in the morning, we get to our favorite, Kim Potts at TV Screener. She's a TV gal at Yahoo. The hour is sponsored by Wintrust Community Banks. The entertainment sponsored by the Captain James A. Lovell Federal Healthcare Center. I hate the term breaking news because there isn't any.
Right.
Breaking news doesn't mean anything anymore because it's been just overused by everybody. Having said that, Andre has breaking news.
I do, yeah. And Steve did not mention this in the news, nor did Mary in the traffic, so I'm going to have to pick up the slack.
Major faux pas by both of them.
Both of them here. The herd of buffalo on the loose in Juneau County. 120 buffalo escaping from their enclosure in southern Juneau County late last night.
Is that Alaska?
No, this is Wisconsin.
I didn't know there was a Juneau County in Alaska or in Wisconsin.
Is this a main road or a county road?
Well, Juneau County Sheriff says it's creating dangerous travel conditions in the Union Center and Elroy areas. So don't approach or disturb the buffalo on foot or in cars.
Are they undercover, like they're pretending to be just normal Wisconsinites?
No, but they could stampede. This is not a joke.
Oh.
They're working to contain and capture the buffalo. So please don't approach them and don't entice them to
the saddest thing, and this is what makes a buffalo angry, is when they try to hail an Uber, because they take their smartphone and they try to punch in whatever they need to punch in on their Uber app, and with their hooves it's very hard to hit the right keys.
This isn't too far from the Dells either, just FYI.
Oh, the Buffalo Dells?
No, the Wisconsin Dells.
Oh. Man, my son just bought a house up there in that area.
Well, you know, you should have looked at this. What's the standard?
The buffalo alert.
The standard question you ask realtors, are the schools good and are there ever buffalo stampedes? Those are the two things you want to know.
Gosh, yes. I wish I would have known this yesterday.
So
thanks, Andrea.
Again,
anytime, you guys.
Again, if you're just turning on the radio, buffalo stampede in Elroy, many injured.
But no, they haven't stampeded yet. Just don't approach them. They have the potential to stampede.
I do future news. I actually predict the news going forward based on the story.
Okay, there you go. Somebody's got to go round them up.
So you would just love to see a stampede up there.
It would be fun.
Yeah.
But not so much for the people of Elroy.
No.
It's 8:16. After Mary does the traffic, Kim Potts does the TV. You got a question? Text me. 312-981-7200. Nobody better than Kim Potts. She knows the TV. Kim, I bet your cable never goes out, does it?
I have to reboot the box like everybody else.
Yeah, and the person I was talking to, the customer service person, I can't say which cable service it was, but it rhymes with AT&T. They couldn't have been more snippy about it. Well, have you rebooted your box? No, I'm sitting down. I don't want to go do that. Then I had to download the app and I could reboot the box from my phone. So that was kind of cool, you know?
They do make it a little, they make it easy for you to do it yourself, but it always happens at the worst time, I think.
I just said, can't you get up from what you're doing and go do it? That's what I said. I said, you work there. Can't you go over to the place and flip the switch with my name on it? Can't you go do that? I said, I work 4 hours a day. I'm tired. All right.
That's why we have remote controls. We're not supposed to have to move.
That's exactly right. All right, let's talk TV, starting with the mandatory Andrea question about her favorite show.
I know, May 8th, Kim, a day that we will all remember. Last time ever for The Good Wife.
It's coming up way too quickly. Just 4 episodes left, actually, including this weekend's episode. They're promising a surprising finale, but nothing that will be so out there that it will be unsatisfying. But I just did find out something that Eli is going to be asking Jason to investigate Peter as the trial comes up. So I think that's going to be a great little storyline.
Andrea's jaw just dropped.
Oh, I had a feeling that might happen, Kim, just because the way it was going. Will it end? Do we think with closure, will there be closure, or it's not going to be open-ended, right? We'll know what happens.
I think we'll definitely know what happens. They've also promised that they aren't going to do a time jump, which I think a lot of people thought they would do. But so they've got a lot to wrap up in just 4 episodes. But at least a lot of series end and they don't get the renewal, and we're left with whatever their final episode was. At least they're getting the chance to wrap it up the way they want to. So I think they'll do right by viewers.
Thank you, Kim.
Frank Underwood plays Kevin Spacey plays Frank Underwood, who plays the president on the show, Dave, that you and I, Andrea, we all watch. Lots of people watch.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped watching at episode 7 because Trump was more outrageous, as we talked about last time, Kim. But I have gotten to episode 10. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but where Frank Underwood resigns and joins Justin Bieber on the road. And, a lot of people didn't see
that
coming.
Thanks for wrecking it.
A lot of people did. Of course, we're talking about House of Cards. Were you happy with this season?
You know what? I just finished the season yesterday, in fact. I will say I binge watched it in just a few days, and that definitely, the thing about binge watching is that it can cover up a multitude of sins within a season. When you're watching things so quickly, you often don't notice a lot of stuff until you start thinking about it afterwards. Overall, I thought it was entertaining, but seriously, you mentioned the Trump thing.
Yeah.
The part of it is that this season, the campaigning for the next election with Frank and Conway, it can't seem as outrageous as real life is right now. And I think that that did actually affect the viewing experience.
I totally agree.
Of this season. Yeah. So overall, I found it entertaining. The thing I most, I won't be too spoilery, because as you said, a lot of people are still finishing it. There is a new relationship for Claire that I just hated.
Claire had an affair. Listen, you see it coming. It's not a spoiler.
Yeah, that's not a shot.
Yeah, Claire had...
I thought that was coming.
Claire has an affair, and in the midst of this season all about Claire, I don't know about you, TV gal, but it didn't fit for me.
It didn't fit for me at all, and especially Frank signing off on it. It just went in a direction that I think undermined a lot of what did work for this season. So I love the addition of Joel Kinnaman as Conway, the rival for Frank, because he was pretty formidable with him.
And, yeah, it was good.
That's sometimes what's missing with the show, someone who you really believe is capable of going up against the Underwoods. So I thought that part was good. I'm anxious to see where it goes in season 5, though. It's an interesting ending.
And I don't want to spoil it again, but episode 13, Ted Cruz comes out of the closet and runs away with Marco Rubio.
Okay.
And nobody saw that coming either. Those are both big shocks. Kim Botts is here. All right. I've asked Sandberg, the producer, to join us here because she's nuts for a show. Dave, you like this show as well, that I liked in the first two episodes, and then I just gave up on it. And that show is?
Billions.
Yeah, I'm way behind on it.
But you love it.
I enjoyed the first two or three episodes. I just haven't... I've been watching House of Cards, so I've been able to get back to it.
Kim, it was the best season finale of a series this year, right?
You know what? That's on my summer list. I, like Steve, just watched the first couple of episodes, and then there's so many other things going on with Walking Dead and Better Call Saul and all these intense dramas that I just kind of decided I had to put on the summer catch-up list so that I could really focus on it. But it has been renewed for a second season.
Yes.
So everybody feel free to jump in and catch up on it. And I've only heard good things from people who watch it.
Phenomenal cast. Phenomenal cast.
Definitely.
It really a good cast, but I couldn't. There were just too many leaps to make, you know?
I know the one issue you mentioned.
Who doesn't enjoy a little weekend S&M? But, I mean, that was like episode 2, and it was over the top, like right away. I love Paul Giamatti. He's great in everything. But the basic premise of Paul Giamatti's wife working for the bad guy he's chasing and coming home to spank him, it lost me at some point.
You know, with a lot of these dramas in the last couple of years, it seems like episode 3 or 4 is the magic one that really hooks you. That was true with Bloodline on Netflix. So many shows. So I always, even if it's a little slow going, I try to make it through to episode 4 before deciding whether I'm going to give up on it or not.
That's a good rule. Marion, her new hair. Do you have any questions from the 7th floor?
I have like 10, but I'll hold it down to 2. What happened to Mercy Street on PBS? I love that show, the Civil War show. And I've been watching those two sitcoms that are together, Grandfathered and Grindr. I loved them at the beginning, and now they're like taking a turn for the worse. Are they going to continue?
Good question. They're both up in the air at Fox for next season. A lot of networks this season haven't renewed, or are really waiting until the last minute to renew things. The upfronts, the TV upfronts are in May when the networks have picked their new pilots and announced their schedules. So a lot of them are really seem to be waiting until that middle May deadline to announce it. I agree with you. Grandfathered, I didn't love as much as The Grindr, but they both have been funny. You love the cast of both of them. And The Grindr, I think, is a legitimately very, very clever concept. And Rob Lowe is really game for making fun of himself.
He's good.
I love him.
He's good. He's funny.
He's so great.
Mary, if you would text Kim your other 28 questions, she'd be happy to answer
Mercy Street, though. Where is Mercy Street? It, like, disappeared.
It did, and that's kind of its status right now. No one knows what's going on with Mercy Street, unfortunately. And like you, I thought it was a really well-done show.
Awesome, awesome.
Talking to Kim Potts, let's run through the lightning round with some listener questions here. And the first one, Mary, you like this show as much as I do. Castle went off the rails this year with a stupid storyline. Is it savable or is it over?
You know what? It's one of those shows that they have not announced yet. This is season 8. They haven't renewed for season 9 yet. And from what I understand, the season finale is May 16th, and producers are shooting two different endings.
Right.
One that will be a season finale, one that will serve as a series finale just in case.
Yeah, I hope they don't go out with this season because it wasn't good. Just wasn't good. Yeah. Shades of Blue, is it coming back?
Definitely. Definitely a big surprise hit for NBC.
Stalker, did you guys talk about that yet? Not a stalker, but the TV show Stalker.
No, I don't think we are going to see that one again.
Okay, still waiting to hear. Into the Badlands, not a lot of hype for it. I don't know the show. An AMC series, I'm told?
It's an AMC series. Didn't get the reception that they were hoping. AMC has all of those big, huge hits. But occasionally, one just doesn't catch on. And they're coming back for season 2. I'm guessing they'll make some adjustments and try to draw people in this time.
Good follow-up question here to the Castle thing, because it's a different, more darker vibe. But what's this new show on ABC, The Chase or The Catch?
The Catch.
Yeah. Looks promising. Yes, no?
It does. I think it hasn't caught on as much as, no pun intended, but I don't think it has caught on as much as they had hoped that it would. You know what? It's tough, though. They're introducing some of these series later in the season, and I think at this point people are just, they want to see the end of the show, the finales of the shows that they're already invested in. Once they end, maybe they're willing to jump into a new series in the summer, but right now I don't think it's a great time to launch things.
Orange is the New Black coming back to Netflix when?
June. I don't remember the exact date, but it is definitely in June, and it looks very good.
Any news on Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Oh, gosh, aren't we all waiting on that? I think one day Larry David is just going to wake up, and he'll go, okay, I'll do another one.
Yeah, and he'll write on his legal pad, he'll write 12 episodes, and then he'll go to work.
Exactly.
On Blacklist, is Elizabeth really dead?
Ooh, you know what? I know they definitely made it seem like it. Spoiler alert for everybody who hasn't caught up yet from last night.
Steve.
But
what are you gonna do?
I don't know. That's been, people are angry at a lot of their shows this season because of some fake deaths and some cliffhangers, and it's hard to believe that they would kill off the lead, but I guess maybe. I know that there is in the next episode a funeral. Whatever that may mean.
I apologize. I can't get to all of these questions, but again, I only got to two of Mary's 48, so you guys hopefully you'll understand. And last thing is, this question for me is, Game of Thrones ever going to be a musical? No? Okay. All right. Kim, you're the best. You're the best, Kim. We love you.
Thank you,
Steve. Bye, Kim. Love you, Kim.
All right.
Kim,
love you, Kim.
Kim Potts, at TV Screener. That's why she was the number one guest last year in the Stevie Awards.
I still had more questions.
Yeah, I know. No, we had to cut you off.
About the Civil War?
No, I know how it ended.
Yeah. Big story next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Did you like the edge you guys had on the physical?
No. We're going to have to go up way bigger. We had 41 or 45 hits. We're going to have to get it into the 70s.
Well, I'm not sure about that comment, but I hope there's some validity to it. Yeah, I hope he tries to go to 70. That means we got the puck the whole game.
Yeah. Coach's throwdown. Q was right about that, by the way. Blues want to spend the whole game beating the hell out of the Blackhawks. They're not going to have the puck when they're doing it.
We've seen the Hawks win that way before.
Yeah, bring it. Mm-hmm. Pat Boyle does a great job on Comcast Sportsnet. And, he talks to some real dunderheads over there. Kaplan works there. Yeah. At CSN Boyle, and Pat joins us now. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
How's your golf game?
not great, but maybe might get out there this weekend. We're going to try to maybe sneak in 9 tomorrow.
Where's my invite?
Always an invite. Always an invite. I got to brush up on my game here before you take more money away from me.
Play this summer. You know, your buddy Teddy Greenstein was on last week. Of course, he was hanging at Augusta at the Masters, so I believe he's outclassed us now.
Oh, and he was at that Berkman's place, which is like heaven on earth inside the Augusta National grounds.
Your kids play golf yet?
They do. They do. We send them to golf camp every year for like a week, and then we try to sneak out with them and play a few holes.
That's fun, man. It's fun getting the kids on the golf course.
Oh, it's the best. It's the best. And one of the guys who we play with said, here's the deal. Just have the kids tee it up from the 150 marker out. And that way they feel like they've played every hole, and you don't have to endure all the trials and tribulations that the rest of us do from 450 yards out.
But the 150 also takes away the pressure of a parent feeling like you're holding up the rest of the field if the golf course gets busy or if there's people waiting. From 150 in, everybody can wait for a kid to finish a hole.
Yeah, and I know you let me do that too as well.
Yes, I do.
I appreciate that.
Well, it was embarrassing when you're playing off the Reds. I got many Hawks questions for you, but first let's catch the traffic and then we'll come back. And then I have a personal question. It's none of my business. I'll ask Pat as well. Stand by for that. How's that tease, huh?
That's so unlike you.
Yeah, it really is. I'm shy. What do you have, Mayor?
Inbound Ryan accident, 35th. Left lane is blocked. It's about 22 minutes in from 95th. Bartlett accident to Army Trail and Route 59. Heavy delay still on the Eisenhower and Hour 10 from 53. Hour from Mannheim, 36 outbound. 52 inbound on the Kennedy from O'Hare. 46 on the inbound Stevenson from the Tri-State. Tollway's not too bad. Just Tri-State delays pretty much from 55 to 290. Traffic sponsored by Hum by Verizon. Put some smarts in your car. Plug in Hum by Verizon to get vehicle diagnostics, emergency assistance, and pinpoint roadside assistance. For a smarter, safer, more connected car, go to hum.com. Mary Vandeveld, WGN Traffic Central.
Pat Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet. How many games have you done since the Blackhawks resurgence? Is it 10,000, 20,000? It's a lot.
Yeah, it's at least about 500,000, I believe.
It's a lot of games. But you got to love hockey, and we all do. And again, you know I'm a fan as much as a friend, and I just think you do great work.
Well, we have a lot. I mean, look, this is, you know, as you guys realize at WGN Radio, it's been the greatest transformation in professional sports. Yep. Just to see where this team has come from, and then to continue this sustained excellence has just been so much fun. So, you know, I know they hit a little bit of a bump on Wednesday night, but, you know, we've been through this before with them. I think the most incredible stat when you look at what Joel Quenneville has done with this team, they're 30-31 in games 1 through 3. But 43-14 in games 4 through 7.
How about that?
It's incredible. So they get better as the series progresses, and hopefully that will continue tonight in game 2.
The thing we felt bad about in game 1 was Duncan Keith's not available. They outplay the Blues the entire game. You get that one, and now you really got a leg up, but it didn't happen.
Right, and I think Duncan is going to be a huge lift tonight. The power play was 0-for-5 the other night. He's going to bring, I think, a new wrinkle to that. I think they might try to put him in the high slot area and try to create some different looks for Elliott and the Blues there. And I think, you know, you played that soundbite before we spoke, how Ken Hitchcock saying, you know, they want to ratchet up the physicality and try to get in the 70s in hits.
Bad idea.
Bring it on. Ryan Kesler said that a year ago. He said no human could withstand the punishment we're gonna put on the Hawks. And, well, that we saw how that worked out. They won in game 7.
It doesn't even make sense logically. After seeing what happened with the Ducks last year and the fact that you got a faster team, and for people that aren't hockey fans, you can only be hit if you have the puck. So if they're hitting you where you have the puck and the fastest team takes the puck away, somebody's not covered. Somebody's going to get a shot. Somebody's going to score.
Exactly. And, you know, we've seen from this Hawks team throughout the last half dozen years, it's just that the speed kills, and they're able to, you know, withstand the physicality and the hits that other teams try to put on them. But, again, if you're going to lay out 70 hits, that means the Hawks have the puck all night long. They had it most of the night in game 1. They just weren't able to cash in.
You know, Pat, I looked at that game and saw a bunch of guys who looked pretty fresh. It looked like they had fresh legs because they hadn't played much. You know, Corey Crawford, maybe a little fresher in the, maybe not the way you want to get that rest, but kind of the same with Keith when he comes back tonight. I mean, he hasn't played since the 29th of last month. Did you get that sense that maybe they're a little quicker and maybe at a comparable time in the playoffs in past years, you got some guys who are kind of dragging out there?
Yeah, Dave, I thought, you know, the biggest positive to take away from game one was that Corey Crawford was sharp. He looked like the Crawford we saw all season long, who was among the tops in the NHL. I thought the speed was there. I thought both teams, I thought they kind of were feeling each other out, almost like it was like a heavyweight fight, and it was just kind of the early rounds. But I did think our speed was there. Both teams didn't give a lot in the neutral zone as far as time and space. I would like to see more production from our bottom six. I mean, those two lines are usually the difference makers in the Stanley Cup playoffs, because you like to think the Taze and Kane line cancels out with the top lines of the Blues or whoever they're facing, and it's the Andrew Shaws and the Desjardins and the Krugers who end up making the difference when it's all said and done. I didn't see a ton of production out of those two lines, and I think you're going to see a tweak on the third line for tonight's game.
Everybody healthy?
Everybody's healthy, yeah. Everybody's ready to go. And, I mean, I think you heard a little perturbed Joel Quenneville there as he was kind of answering back to what Ken Hitchcock said, who, by the way, is a dead ringer for Captain Kangaroo. I know I'm identifying with only, like, you know, the 45 and up audience, but...
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. Dead on, except for the mutton chops. Doesn't have the mutton chops, but other than that, he is Captain Kangaroo.
It's funny, though. It's true, though, because if you saw Brian Elliott outside of his Blues goalie gear, he looks like Mr. Green Jeans.
Does he? So, I did not.
I don't know that.
Is that
yeah.
right?
Yeah. It's going to be fun tonight, and I feel very good about the outcome, and I think it's going to be ugly for the Blues when they get back here on Sunday afternoon, where cheap plug Dave Kaplan. Dave Kaplan will not be there.
Oh.
Dave Ennett and I will be there along with a young man named Mark Carman from 11 to 1:30 prior to the game. And people think, it was funny, because people think, well, Pat Boyle, how great is this gig got to be? He's with the Blackhawks. How many times have you actually seen a game where you could just kick back and watch it? Never at home, right?
I get to watch the games that are WGN-TV at home. So
right, it's not a lot. It's a handful.
Not many, yeah. Most of the time I'm at the game or...
And not that it's not fun working it, but you don't get to watch it like the rest of us do.
No, not all, you know, half tuned up and, you know, with the feet on the Barca lounger and kicking back. No, not exactly.
All right, so you feel good about tonight? We want everybody to feel good about tonight.
I think they're going to bounce back. I think you can't hold Kane down very long. I mean, he's only been held off the score sheet 18 times this season. So I think they'll get past the true one goal mantra tonight of the franchise, and I think they'll light the lamp for about three. I'm predicting a 3-1 victory.
I like that. 3-1
sounds about right.
I'd take 3-1. Yeah, that's
right.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
At CSN Boyle. All right, the most important question we have for you is, you know, we have new producers here on the program.
Is this the personal question?
It's the personal stuff,
good.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And one we refer to as Sandberg because Mary Vandeveld has squatters rights on her own name. So we love Sandberg. She's doing a great job.
And she's the best.
And we don't know how to refer to her in relation to you. So what's appropriate in your world with her?
She's the executive producer of the Cochran Show, and she's the executive producer
of your house?
Of Pat Boyle's life.
So, but are we talking girlfriend, fiance, what's the right term here?
Well, it's definitely fiance. We're doing things out of order because this is number two for both of us.
Okay.
So we've done things a little out of order this time around, but it's definitely fiance. Yeah. And we've got a whole thing planned here. Hopefully after a Blackhawks parade this summer, we'll figure some things out.
Well, you're a lucky guy. You're over your skis on this. You know that.
Oh, completely.
Yeah,
outkicked the coverage here. Yeah. So, yeah. Don't screw it up for me, Steve.
No, not at all. No, I say nothing but good things around here. The things she's saying about you. Woo!
I know. She airs the dirty laundry.
Pat, do
not
you know?
Not all of it, Pat.
Okay.
Just a little bit.
Do you know her folks?
I do.
Yeah. They're really, her dad's really youthful, right? Very youthful.
He's youthful. He looks a little bit like you, but oddly enough, when you're around him, he doesn't smell like kale. So,
which is great, which is fantastic.
Yeah. Nice.
Let me tell you something, and I'm assuming Sandberg told you this, but the look on Dave's face when he realized Mary's dad was his age the other day, I would have paid $1,000 if I knew I could recreate it.
Dave turned purple. And we know he loves purple, but, you know.
Tremendous. Just tremendous.
Yeah.
All right. Well, keep up the good work, buddy. And have fun with the kids this weekend and you guys playing golf. And when Sandberg beats you, try to deny it because she'll tell us.
All right. Well, we'll see you on the links a little bit later on. Hopefully it's late in the summer because the Hawks have kept us busy.
Yeah, we'll stretch it out. We'll stretch it out as far as we can. And again, we are supporting and endorsing Pat Boyle's pick, Hawks 3-1 winners tonight.
Absolutely.
At CSN Boyle. Follow him on social media, not to his house. And at 855. How about this? You got to be a Pat Boyle fan, okay? You got to be a Pat Boyle fan. Sandberg will answer the phones. First correct caller, boxers or briefs? She knows. We don't know. Boxers or brief for Pat Cole, for Pat Boyle. First correct caller, boxers or brief, wins a $100 gift card to the Blackhawks.
Or what's the other one that you guys?
What do you mean, what other one?
Boxer briefs.
That's it, yeah.
Boxers brief for boxer briefs?
Yeah, boxer briefs.
Yeah. It's well, like combo, my Tommy Johns. I got the Tommy John boxer briefs on today.
Okay. TMI.
It's not TMI. I'll show you.
Okay.
You had the surgery?
What?
What?
Not there. $100 gift card for the Blackhawk store, locations in Chicago, Oak Brook, Old Orchard, and United Center. Compliments to the Village of Bedford Park, helping you gear up for the playoffs with the new Blackhawk swag. Village of Bedford Park, think about relocating your business for success. Again, first correct caller that can correctly identify if Pat Boyle is a boxer, a brief, or a boxer brief man.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
You never let on how much you like a girl. Oh, Dabby. Hi. Two. You always call the shots. Kiss me. You won't regret it. Now, three. Act like wherever you are, that's the place to be. Isn't this great? Four. When ordering food, you find out what she wants, then order for the ball field. It's a classy move. Now, the lady will have the linguine and white clam sauce and a Coke with no ice. And five. Now, this is most important, Rat. It comes down to making out. Whenever possible, put on side one of Led Zeppelin 4.
Ah, there's no end to bad advice on love from your friends. But when your car makes a funny noise, you go to a mechanic. When your heart makes a funny noise, you go to Bella. Bella Gandhi.
Really good. Did you just think of that?
Yeah, I just made it up.
That's pretty good.
SmartDatingAcademy.com. And later this hour, another one of my favorite people, Dr. Sam Ristich, will be on with us with an embarrassing, awkward story about animals. You know, he always brings up some awkward reference to a critter. Kind of makes us uncomfortable, but it's okay if he says it because he's a doctor. Totally different than this segment, by the way. Bella Gandhi is here, looking fabulous as always. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. Great to be here.
Nice to see you. And how are things at the Smart Dating Academy?
Things at Smart Dating Academy are excellent. There's lots of love in the air. So it's a big wedding year, big baby year. So get excited. Chicagoans, love is definitely in the air this summer.
You're still doing a Steve Harvey show all the time.
Yeah, I do it often.
Yeah, but they ask you to come back all the time. Didn't we see you on the Today Show as well?
Yes.
Yeah, she's not. She's
wasn't
not,
she like is... your roommate in college? She's killing.
Yeah, Bill's one of my best friends from college. I've known her, you know, from back in
the
day.
Did she return your calls now?
Yes, she does. She's awesome. Okay. I've known Bella since our awkward 80s photo days.
Absolutely.
Big hair and
since
blue
we
eye
used
shadow.
To go to, you know, quarter beers and Time Warp Tuesdays and all sorts of skeletons in our little closet.
Do you light up like she does when the 80s come up as a topic?
Clearly.
Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah.
Clearly. Yeah. Let's talk Duran Duran.
Lame decade.
Right?
60s, 40s, Dave. How were the 40s? Were the 40s good?
Steve, they were okay. The latter half of the 40s were
he's more
very
of a,
strong.
A roaring 20s kind of guy.
No, that was
a flappery.
That was his older brother. at 9:15, Bella Gandhi can help you as the founder and president of Smart Dating Academy and her tremendous staff as well. Here's the thing. You're going to invest in stuff, right? You're going to invest in clothes. You're going to invest in a car. You're going to invest in whatever hobby. Invest in, you know, cheating on your taxes. Whatever you're going to invest in. Why wouldn't you invest in something as important as your love life?
Yeah.
why wouldn't you take the time to find out about Smart Dating Academy and say, I got to get in? Because what you do is, this is not some match.com website situation. There's a million of those. You actually coach people on how to behave, how to act, how to find out if they're wasting their time, how to make good dating decisions, right?
Absolutely. How to avoid disappointment, how to avoid heartbreak, and how to find love, most importantly. It's the most important thing people say they ever do, more important than your job. This is your person. This is the person you're going to spend the rest of your life with.
You see patterns develop, right, all the time. Are the patterns gender-specific?
They can be, you know, a lot of it, you know, let's get a little shrinky for a second. A lot of it can, you know, be contingent on what you saw at home and the relationships that your parents had with each other, the relationship that your parents had with you. Sometimes it's people you might have had a crush on in high school, dated in high school, and some people, you know, never really date and love like grown-ups. We get stuck on these merry-go-rounds, and for women, I call it same dude, different face, year over year. Then we wonder, why aren't things any different? Why haven't I found love?
She's cracking up. I know.
I heard something the other day, which I had not heard before, in a dating theory. Tell me if it's crazy. The dating theory is if you see men or women who are dating older people than them, it's not about finding someone that's similar to their mom or their dad. It's about finding someone that's a little bit older who they can fix and be the mom or dad type that they didn't have. In other words, they're not looking to date their mom, but there are things about their mom or their dad, and more often than not, it's a dad figure. And their dad was disappointing to them or didn't give enough attention or whatever. Does that happen?
Yeah, it can definitely happen. I mean, typically, as human beings, we're creatures of habit, right? We do what's right instead of, or we do what's comfortable for us instead of what's right. So if suddenly we feel this certain familiarity with the person, it could be like, wow, you kind of remind me of my dad. There's a gravitation for many people towards that. Whether it's good or bad, that's really the question.
Belle, I hear a lot of times just with stories, you'll say that one of the biggest complaints is that people tend to go on a first date or maybe even a second and tend to talk about themselves too much. But how do you get to know each other without kind of talking about yourself a little more than you normally would?
Well, first rule of thumb, you know, it's like everything I learned about dating I learned in kindergarten. It's if you've heard your own voice for more than 5 minutes, it's time to give your date a turn. So, and a lot of times, and let's just get a little, let's talk a little bit about gender here. A lot of times women will complain to me that men will monopolize the date. You can barely get a word in edgewise, and women tend to ask a lot of good questions to get a guy to talk. So guys, don't do that. And because women are looking for that. It's like, yeah, I'm going to ask you all about you because I'm interested, but bounce the ball back. Ask her a question, because if not, she's going to walk out going, this guy's a narcissist.
Well, one of the things that you do at Smart Dating Academy, I know, is you try to teach people to be comfortable with who they are and to present their best selves.
That's
right.
That's right. Know who you refine your picker. Start picking the right people. And then who are you going to bring to the date? There's two big keys to this.
Do you give similar advice for women and men of all ages? Or are there different words of advice and encouragement for women in their 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s, 60s?
So the advice by gender is different. I mean, there's certain things that are similar to most people, men and women. So I would say if you're in your 20s and you're thinking, wow, you know what? Hanging out at the bars and playing on the local softball team isn't getting me to meet the people I want. Get on a couple of dating apps if you're in your 20s. Those run off of Facebook. Everybody's on them. Pick something like Hinge, like Bumble, like Tinder. They're free. You can download them in 5 minutes. You could be on a date by lunchtime today.
But
not suggesting that, but you could.
What about the cliche that they're all hookup sites? Are they all hookup sites? Or a hookup depends on you?
The hookup depends on you, right? A bar could be a hookup site if that's what you want to do. An app can be a hookup site if that's what you want to do. Look at online dating, guys, as the world's largest cocktail party.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. Yeah. That's what it is. It's not all skeezy, gross people. It's not all amazing people. Most of the people that are there are good, solid people. They might be for you. They might not be. But they're not axe murderers. They're not serial killers. They're not terrorists. They're just normal people. Well, there are some icks, and there are some amazing ones. So we're shooting for the ones that are good and amazing.
And the world's changed, right? The world's changed because the two places you meet people now are at work, through work, or The other one is obviously on all these sites. So if you're in your 30s and 40s, the other big sites, Match and places like that?
Yeah, get on an online site. You know, there's still, the apps are gaining momentum, but they're definitely skewed towards people in their 20s. So for your 30s or 40s, pick one to two sites, not 9 or 10 sites. I get people that come to Smart Dating Academy saying, I'm throwing my hands up in the air. I'm on 9 different sites. I'm like, you shouldn't be doing 9 of anything at this point in your life. Let's slim it down to 1 or 2. So a site like Match or OkCupid is great if you're in your 30s or 40s. And you have to have the right photos. You have to have the right profile. Spending 5 minutes throwing something online and then being disappointed that you're not getting the right results. If you were looking for a job, you wouldn't spend 5 minutes getting ready for a job interview. You dust off your resume. You'd probably have somebody professional write it. You'd get a new suit. You'd do a lot of preparation. And this is the way you need to think about getting back into the dating world at any age.
And put a picture of yourself up. This is always one of my favorites, that looks like you, not a picture from 20 years ago or completely what,
or that you cut out of greeting cards, right, and then taken shots,
right,
of
photoshopped, you know, look to look like
what about dating after your 50s? We'll talk about that. What about those photos on your site, or I should say on your social media? What about texting? What about staying safe? And we forgot to go through those two keys about refining your picker. Look at your picker. Your picker needs to be refined. It's 9:21. More with Bella in a moment. Bella Gandhi, SmartDatingAcademy.com. The hour in part sponsored by ExpressBet.com.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
What about your girlfriend?
Well, things are getting pretty serious right now. I mean, we chat online for like 2 hours every day, so I guess you could say things are getting pretty serious.
I think if you're using Napoleon Dynamite as your dating Bible, you probably have already lost. One of the great love stories of all time. It is 9:25. Not a lot of time and a lot of things to do here. So Bella Gandhi, SmartDatingAcademy.com. Before we get to your picker, there's an old guy on eHarmony who seems like he really means well. Are you a fan of the eHarmony site or not?
I like eHarmony. I think the premise is great. So Neil Clark Warren is the guy that founded the site. He was a minister. And I agree with what his theory is. The more similar you are to somebody, the better potentially of a longer-term match you actually are. So they match people on 29 different dimensions of personality. So you take a test. It takes about 45 minutes. It's multiple choice. It's not hard, guys. You can do this. And it'll spit out who's a good match for you. And every day it's like a prefix menu. They dole up 4 to 5 different matches, and that's what you get. You can't go searching around in eHarmony. So they really want you to match up with the right people, people that are similar to you. Are you really cautious or adventurous? Do you like to spend a lot of money, or are you more frugal? So it's like the big life things that they try to match you
up. And that's better for people in their 50s. Why?
We've seen a lot more success at Smart Dating Academy. I mean, we've helped people get into scores and scores and scores of marriages over the last 7 years. But eHarmony, for people over 50, it's more controlled. It moves a little slower. Not that Match isn't good also, but we've seen, and I've been to a lot of weddings for people that have gotten married on eHarmony.
See, that's very cool.
Yeah,
very,
it's good. It's a little less daunting.
No, but that's a great point. Do you get invited to all the weddings that come out of your Smart Dating Academy?
I get invited to a lot of them.
Do you go to all of them?
Not all of them.
You
it couldn't. Depends on where they are.
Yeah,
but,
you couldn't.
Right,
you could.
Exactly.
She sends a good gift.
Yeah, exactly. We send a nice gift. We send a nice card.
A nice butter
flowers,
knife.
Flowers, absolutely. Sure, sure. But singles over 50 are our biggest demographic right now at Smart Dating Academy. So if you think
you're thinking about opening maybe a Viagra dealership as well in the back?
Probably some reservations, though. I guess at any age would be staying safe in many ways.
Yes, yes. I know this week, you know, I talked about it a lot, that there was a woman in Washington State was discovered. She'd been missing over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And it, you know, turns out, and they think that the guy, he had a criminal record, but they met on an online site 5 to 6 weeks ago. So we're talking a lot about dating safety this week. And remember, while that is a tragic and unfortunate incident, it's not just related to online dating. That could be somebody that you met in an elevator,
right,
at work. It could be somebody that you met in a bar. So the number one thing to do, guys, to stay safe, trust your gut. Trust your gut. We're all born with great instincts as human beings. Women have great intuition. The problem is our heads screw us up and talk us out of things. But if somebody seems a little off to you, skeezy, negative, just weird, raises the hair on your neck, don't go on the date.
Yeah, and let's be honest. Risk is controllable. You want to get drunk on the first date and go home with a dude that you don't know? Well, why don't you just walk out on the street and pick someone up and say, let's go to your apartment now and have sex. It's a total roll of the dice. Right. If you don't engage in that kind of behavior, you're not going to have the problems. Now, if you choose to engage in that kind of behavior, I recommend mace. possibly attached to your thigh.
I recommend the buddy system.
But should you talk about that early on or just don't bring it up? Like, hey, look, nothing's going to happen tonight. I'm not that kind of person. Or just don't bring it up.
No, schedule your dates in a smart way. A good first date, do it at 6 p.m. Say we're going to meet for a drink because I have quote-unquote dinner plans at 8, whether you do or you don't.
Well, but
that
also gives you an exit. Right? Look, we're not stupid, but we're not that smart. And I can tell you right now, if your phone rings in the middle of your date and there's nobody on the line and you do the conversation thing and, oh, yeah, really? In the hospital? Oh, my God, of course
again?
I'll be right there.
There are apps that can do that for you. Yeah, you don't even have to rely on your flaky friends to do that. So, yeah, but 6 to 7:30, say, oh, my gosh, you know what? I would love to meet you for dinner, kind sir, at 8 o'clock, but I've got plans. But how about we meet at 6 to 7:30 and meet at a place that you're comfortable with? Even guys, bad things can happen. Don't go to some far-flung location to somebody's apartment to pick her up when you're not familiar in the area. You don't know who's going to meet you at the apartment building. So meet at a place that you're both comfortable with and get yourselves there. Nobody needs to pick anybody up for first date.
A little slower if you're serious about a relationship.
Thank you.
And if you're not serious about a relationship and you're looking to score, then there's places to do that as well.
There's different apps for that.
Yeah. All right. I don't want to run out of time before you refine the picker. Two keys to refining your picker and then we'll break.
We put our clients, every single one that comes through Smart Dating Academy, through a process called the marriage map. And the marriage map doesn't mean I have to want to get married, but it helps to look at the patterns that you have. It's like I said before, what happened at home when you were growing up? Because all of these things could have an influence on the people you're picking. We look at the last several relationships that you've had. What worked? What didn't work? What attracted you to this person? What broke you up? What was your responsibility? What was his or her responsibility? So looking at all of these things will really help you to say, aha, I think I've got a pattern where I'm chronically attracted to people that don't like me as much, that are unavailable, that are narcissistic. So really, you've got to stop. You've got to stop the music and do a little digging. And if you can't do it yourself, get somebody in your canoe that can help you to do that, because that is where everything begins and ends. It's how you're looking at the process, who you're picking. That's everything. If not, same merry-go-round, different dude, different chick. Decade over decade.
I didn't know we had to buy a canoe.
We have could to be get a yacht. Canoe? Could be a yacht.
Oh, could be a yacht.
How do you think you canoodle?
Oh,
wow. I love it. I
actually
love
don't.
He loves it.
You're better than that. By the way, Sneed wants to sue you for using her word.
I know.
Listen, I don't want to give away the whole story here because I want people to get a hold of you and ask about smart texting as a part of smart dating. I want people to get a hold of and ask why butterflies are bad and a lot of other key points that you bring up. It's a process. It's worth the time and effort if you're actually serious about doing the right thing for your love life. And it's Bella Gandhi. Did you know Bella was going to be this rock star?
I always knew she would be
a
rock star.
In college, I remember.
Always. She was a rock star in college.
In college, years before we met, I remember you calling me and going, I'm worried about Bella. I don't know what she's going to do with her life. And now look at her.
She's hitting one too many Time Warp Tuesdays. Right. We're a little concerned.
Your family great, I hope?
Thank you, yes. And your family's expanding beautifully.
You want to see more of the grandparents?
I do.
Grandkids pictures, I should say?
I do.
SmartDatingAcademy.com. It's our friend Bella. Here's a slight shift. We'll talk critters in a few minutes with my friend Sam, the vet. Before we get to that, quick break, and then the big story on 720 WGN. We're just talking to Bella off the air. We should have her next time she's in. I don't want to make this the whole thing, obviously, but she got so many great stories about knucklehead dating. I mean, first off, it's a book, but we also got to have her tell her top five or top ten of them.
Oh, absolutely.
One of them involved a cat.
Speaking
Speaking of cats, Dr. Sam Ristich standing by from the Indian Prairie Animal Hospital, one of the finest vets in the country. And pal of mine, and it's IPAVET, IPAHVET.com. He's got this cool new building that he built. He's got this boarding section in the back. Uh-huh. And it's like a Four Seasons for animals. I'd stay back there.
Oh, it's like doggy daycare.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And so I do occasionally just go over and grab a run.
Take a nap.
A kennel and a run. So, Dave, you love dogs.
Yes, I do.
I'm going to make you vice president of dogs if you have any dog questions. Do we have any cat people on this show? I don't think we do, do we?
I don't mind cats. Like, you guys really
don't. All right, so you're vice president of cats.
Oh.
So let's get Dr. Sam in here now. Hello, buddy.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are things at the Indian Prairie Animal Hospital?
Oh, it's a beautiful day, isn't it? Everything is going great.
Are you going to have surgery done in time so you can play golf with me later?
50-50 chance, my friend.
The number at the Indian Prairie Animal Hospital is 630-820-6999. And again, IPAHVET, IPAVET.com. Can I fly through some questions from listeners here?
Yes, and thank you for having the website address ready.
Yeah, well, I can't count on you. This came up a couple of times. Should I pay more for organic food for my dog?
No. Marketing. In fact, you're going to remove the natural label here. No one really knows what holistic means. I'd check with your veterinarian, see what they recommend. And not too many certain things in life, but if the pet store you're buying the food from and the nutrition expert there is also carrying beer for dogs, I don't think they're a nutrition expert.
How much food should my critter get? You know, because you want your dog, your cat to be happy. Does it depend on the breed and the size and all those sort of common sense things?
Yeah, all those common sense things. Here again, I would refer to the veterinarian. With puppies, obviously, they're going to have more meals than an adult dog. But I'm a big time guy. I don't give a set amount. I limit the time. This way, if they're not eating, you take the food away. You don't have them become finicky. Because you remember that old rule in schools, Steve, something that comes in, it's got to come out.
Yep.
So for housebreaking of pets, it's a lot easier to housebreak a pet when they're fed meals and not allowed free choice.
So you shouldn't leave the food just sitting out all day, aside from the...
No. They encourage, they'll watch Oprah, then they'll eat, then they'll watch All My Children, then they'll eat, then they'll turn
it's
on
not,
the cub
it's
game.
It's not healthy. It's not healthy.
It's not healthy.
How do you know if your dog is too plump?
Well, you go by not only the number, the weight, but you do what's called a body condition score. And
You run them, put them on a treadmill? I mean, what does that mean?
A body condition score is a standard that's set that goes by their waistline, how much fat on their ribs. We've discussed this ad nauseum in previous shows. There's two scales. One goes to 9 and one goes to 5. I use the 5 scale where 3 is perfect, 5 is too chunky, and 1 is like Twiggy. And a lot of my staff doesn't know who Twiggy was, so we refer to one of the Olsen twins.
How do I know where my dog's waist is? He doesn't wear pants.
There are pants now available for dogs, but you would go behind the ribs. That starts the waist. So behind the ribs, in front of the hips. Are these actual questions, or are these?
Well, no,
questions?
I've never heard you claim. We've talked about this on the show. We've never had this conversation.
Yes, we have.
So, yeah, I'm just trying to be clear. Dave, Vice President of Dogs, question?
Yes, Dr. Sam, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
So I recently purchased a new bed, courtesy of our friends at Mattress Firm.
Nice, nice, good.
And my dog used to sleep under our bed.
This, under the bed.
Now the
can't
bed.
Do it now.
He can't because we had that great power base.
Yeah, there's no room under
there. So there's no room under there. So he's been kind of a lost soul at night.
Wow.
Then, we do have a bed, a dog bed, at the foot of our bed, which usually he would start the night under the bed, and then by the morning he'd be in his dog bed. But now he's sort of wandering around.
He's going to run away from home, dude.
The room is closed. I mean, he's not leaving the room.
Do you see him get a stick that he's not just chasing? He actually has clothes on the back of it.
But I mean, I feel bad for him because he looks like he's been displaced. And we've tried
well,
a couple.
At least you're comfortable.
He has been. There's been a change in the scenery there, and he'll acclimate. He'll get used to it. How big of a dog is it?
He's about 21 pounds.
Yeah, bring him in bed with you.
Okay, that's where I draw the line.
It's weird when the dog tries to operate the remote for the bed anyway.
Yes, yeah. It is.
He hits all the control buttons at once. Andrea, Vice President of Cats.
Well, yeah, I'm only Vice President of Cats because I don't dislike them like all of you guys do.
I don't dislike them. I'm just, they could kill me. They're very allergic.
I guess my question would be, why are cats so weird?
Oh, boy.
Why are they so aloof?
Well, not according to cat people. I mean, the bottom line is with most people, you either love cats or you dislike cats. There doesn't seem to be any, you know, middle of the road. So cats have, you know, interesting behaviors, but they're really smart. They're really good pets. And most cat people have more than one cat.
How do you tell if a cat's a boy or a girl?
Well, it depends on what they read.
No, but you can't
go by their name.
No, you can't see a you-know-what on a cat.
You have to look for the you-know-what. They do have a you-know-what down there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and you have to prolapse it out because it's not the biggest you-know-what.
Let's be clear on something. Let's be clear on something. You need to prolapse it out.
And, Steve, that brings up our first interesting fun fact.
Oh, you got a fun fact? This is good. Dr. Sam always has pet fun facts. What do you have?
How could you tell by looking at a male cat's penis if it's been neutered or not?
Well, by the attitude of the cat. You know, the cat, if the cat's hanging its cat head down and it's just walking away and hoping other cats don't notice it, I have a feeling it's in, you know, it's in post-neuter stress syndrome.
If he wanted to go for high tea at noon at the Drake,
there's that.
All good answers. But actually, if you can't visualize, obviously, the testicles.
Yeah, clearly.
The penis in an intact male cat has these little spikes, these little bars on there. Yeah. And
this is why cats are weird. They have spikes.
Yeah, they got spikes on their penis, and it's, you know, from testosterone. And you,
wow.
I
that's why the women cats are running away.
Wow.
Exactly, because female cats are induced ovulators. So the actual act of sex with those barbs, the pain that it elicits, boom, causes them to ovulate.
Yeah, listen, the female cat goes, I'm ovulating. Leave me alone.
Well, they don't spontaneous ovulate.
Oh, they do now.
Yeah,
they're hearing this. Big cat listenership. Well, that's interesting.
Good trivia, though.
And really disturbing.
There's a lot of induced ovulation going on in your backyard these next couple months with the rabbits. Because rabbits are induced ovulators, too.
I was in a band called Induced Ovulation.
You haven't covered this on the show already this morning, have you?
No, I'm sure it's like the other thing. We've talked about it nonstop. Hold on. More with Dr. Sam coming up. It's IPAVET, IPAHVET.com. 630-820-6999. Spikes. You wonder why they run into room, run right back out? They're trying to make sure nobody notices that problem.
We need to have Dr. Sam and Dr. Stryker on the same. Well, no, we went
on the last
the
show we're doing.
Yeah.
We'll come back with Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN. Talking to my friend Dr. Sam Ristich, Indian Prairie Animal Hospital, IPAVET, IPAHVET.com, 630-820-6999. Not only is an entertaining guy, he also is a terrific veterinarian, one of the best in the business by far. And they've got that boarding thing in the back I told you about in his new facility.
Yeah, it's like a little hotel.
Yeah, and their slogan is, we'll leave the toilet seat up for you. Because, you know, the dogs like to drink out of it.
Sure.
So that's a nice thing. All right, Doc, a couple more lightning round questions?
Sure.
How old should my puppy be, my new puppy be, before they go outside?
They need to have their primary vaccination before they have a lot of exposure to other dogs. So I would say no younger than, you know, 12 to 16 weeks. But they can go outside to eliminate. You want to housebreak them right away.
But don't let them just romp outside when they're 2 months old.
Yeah, I wouldn't take them to the dog park or exposure to a lot of other dogs that might have been unvaccinated. There's a lot of vaccine apathy these days, so you got to be careful.
Flea, tick, heartworm meds, there's a lot of stuff available. You got to be with the right vet and ask the right question, or how does that work?
Exactly. I kind of like the combo packages that get both heartworm, intestinal worms, and flea and tick prevention.
So like a one-a-day multivitamin for your dog?
Once a month, usually. But
okay. Should you brush your dog's teeth?
Yeah, you need to brush your dog's teeth at least once a week to stop the plaque from becoming tartar or the calculus on there. Because once it becomes calcified like that, the only way you're going to get it off is professionally. And, you know, especially cats, people don't realize probably about 50% of cats have some form of dental disease. And you ever have a bad tooth, Steve?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's all you think about. Poor it's animals. Bad. They got more than one bad tooth.
Why haven't you invented, because then you wouldn't have to take my calls, why haven't you invented a beef-flavored chewable that a dog could use that literally cleans their teeth, not one of these gimmicky things?
Well, nothing really is as effective as brushing.
Well,
none of the rinses,
that.
None of
Maybe
the sprays.
You need to try harder.
I don't think so.
Okay. How often should your pet be bathed, and can you do it too often?
Can't do it too often as long as you rinse well. The condition will dictate how often. You know, with some superficial bacterial infections, sometimes bathing every other day. And just like it says on the back of the shampoo bottle, you know, it says lather, rinse, and then what does it say after that?
Repeat.
Repeat. You have to either lather, rinse, or repeat, because those shampoos are designed to work best on clean hair. So the first time you got to get all the grime out. The second time it does its action.
That's how they get you. That's how they sell you the shampoo. Mm-hmm. And finally, can my pet make me sick? Can I catch something from them?
Yeah, those are called zoonotic diseases. And the most dreaded one that we vaccinate against would be rabies disease. And now we have to look forward to Dave sleeping with his dog. It could get intestinal parasites and give it to him.
The dog could get parasites from Dave?
No, the dog would get parasites to Dave.
Oh, I see. I thought it was the other way around. All right, Doc, any final words from you of wisdom?
Yeah, you know, I was been dealing this week. I was surprised how many people forgot the poop samples.
Uh-huh.
And they said, oh, I'll bring it back later. I put it in a refrigerator. Bad idea, Steve.
You know, that's the whole sentence is a terrible idea.
Never put your pet's poop in a refrigerator. I think I'd like to leave the show with that thought.
Words to live by.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you something. If I had done that, that would be the only thought in my head. Not only would I not leave the house without it, I'd have a hazmat suit on. And
exactly.
I'd be carrying it to the car like it was explosive C4.
I heard that 3 or 4 times this week.
Oh, you got to get rid of those people.
Mm-hmm.
IPAVET, IPAHVET.com. Dr. Sam Ristich and his great staff, 630-820-6999. Thank you, buddy.
Alrighty.
Bill and Wendy next.